Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. And now, on to the show.
I am very excited to introduce our speaker today, Simon Miner. Simon is the founder of Pedal Point Solutions, an agency that helps you learn, practice, and experience digital accessibility. He's a certified professional in web accessibility with more than 25 years experience in web development and software engineering. He is passionate about making websites accessible and creating tools to overcome digital barriers for people with disabilities. Simon has been training corporations, colleges, and community organizations in web accessibility for over 10 years. And if you're in our Facebook group, he's recently been sharing a lot of really great, helpful blog posts in there. So we very much appreciate that. So welcome, Simon, to the
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm going to stop sharing so you can start sharing. While we're getting set up with that, a quick note to everyone. We do have the Q&A module turned on for the webinar. We're going to hold all questions to the end, but if you are able to put those in the Q&A, that would be helpful. Sometimes they can get lost in the chat. So as soon as Simon's done with his presentation, I'll come back and we'll make sure to address all of your questions. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, Amber, for that generous introduction. I'm really honored to be here with you all. I've been kind of a lurker in this space for a while and then started sharing a bit more. And so it's really exciting for me to get to chat with you all today about empathy and how we can learn about that and employ it to help adopt accessibility into our organizations and with our clients. So just a couple things as we get started. If you want to have a local copy of these Google slides to follow along with, they're available publicly. And so if Paola or Amber, if you would mind putting them in the chat again, just so people can click on them if they want to. The other thing is I am low vision. And so I have a big monitor right here, which you may be able to see. If I'm looking at that, I promise I'm not being antisocial or giving you the side eye or anything. It's just it's nice to be able to use the vision I have to be able to follow along with the slides. So with that, we can get going. After Amber's introduction, I really don't need to say too much more about me. I am a, just to describe myself, I guess I'm a guy in my late 40s, a white male with mostly dark hair, but some salt and pepper in it. Smiling this picture with a green sweater on in front of a brick background. So besides the credentials and other things Amber shared, I will share that in addition to founding Pedal Point Solutions, I also still have a full-time job as a website architect at an e-commerce company. So right now I'm in the unique position of having both the opportunity to share accessibility strategies and techniques and how to onboard people to that process in a formal organization as well as with my own clients. Just a little bit of an agenda for this evening. I want to start out with talking about what empathy means in the context of accessibility advocacy. And then we're going to switch and talk about Eureka experiences and what those are and how they can help with empathy. And then we'll spend a little bit of time talking about how to inject accessibility into what's already happening in an organization. And then we'll wrap up with some empathetic strategies that I found useful in my travels. And just so we're honest here, this is not something that that I've done for my entire career. I'm on a journey here. And so I've collected a lot of neat resources and tried a bunch of things, but I'm still becoming in this area a lot. So I'm eager for your questions and conversations along the way. So please do use that Q&A feature if you have thoughts, comments, or questions. And the other thing I'll just say is this presentation will be a little bit interactive with the hopes of maximizing your engagement and enjoyment. So, empathy in accessibility advocacy. I'm wondering if any of you here on the chat can give me a good definition of what empathy might be. If you are willing, would you mind posting in the chat what you think of when you think of the word empathy? Putting yourself in someone else's shoes. Yes, Amber, you've looked at my slides already, and I trust you didn't copy and paste that, but yeah. Connecting. Wow, you guys are all good. able to relate with a person. Amber's faster than you are. Yes. Awesome. Thinking about how and why someone does or says something. Yeah, that's great. Relating to feelings and situations. Perfect. That's great, folks. Yeah, so Oxford's English Dictionary has a short definition of empathy being the ability to emotionally understand another's point of view. And empathy is an active process. It's not necessarily a passive thing. You may have heard the term emotional intelligence, and that is really a practice and a skill based on empathy, being able to understand and appreciate what someone else sees, hears, experiences, feels, whatnot. And like Amber said, putting yourself in their shoes. Empathy is a really great, I won't say tool, a great ideal to have along with accessibility, because it works to foster solidarity and connection, which I really think we need in order to make accessibility work well in our various contexts. And it enables us to exchange the mindset, which we all too easily fall into, of us versus them, to one that's more of we or all of us together. So this is a little diagram that I based on one that Kate O'Connor presented last week in an IAAP networking session. Not sure if any of you got to go to that, but she had a really good summary of different approaches for accessibility advocacy, and I've sort of put them on a spectrum here. And on the one end, you've got sort of approaches that are more altruistic, and on the other hand, you might think of the approaches as more self-serving or self-preserving. But in any case, there are four sort of columns here above this colorful spectrum. On the far left, you've got the moral and ethical case for accessibility, which basically is saying creating accessible digital experiences is the right thing to do. And then next to that, you've got a user experience approach you can take to accessibility, which is based on the fact that accessible digital experiences are better for everybody. These are all well documented and data-driven conclusions. I'm just not making these up. I mean, you've probably heard that there are 1.3 billion people in the world with significant disabilities. So this is a real thing. Business-wise, the case for accessibility is strong in for the business purposes of growing revenue, market share, and brand reputation. And then finally, as we get to the end of the spectrum, you've got the legal case for accessibility, which is based on accessibility being the law and accessible digital experiences that are accessible comply with laws and reduce the risk of litigation. And so honestly, in thinking about these, I began my very hopeful and a little bit naive journey on the far left of this spectrum, thinking that, accessibility is the right thing to do. And so most people want to help, and you know, it's just an awareness thing. And so, yeah, so I went around and I'm encouraging folks, and that's great. It's making some traction, at least in conversations. And one day, I received an email from a vendor of an overlay solution. If you don't know what an overlay is, it is an accessibility toolbar or kit that can be superimposed over a website to offer various controls to help users browse and navigate the website with various helps like bigger text or color contrast. And now overlays are the subject of a lot of debate, and rightly so, because many overlay companies have marketed their solutions as a one-stop soup to nuts solution for accessibility, and that's just not the case. So when I received the message from the overlay vendor, I was immediately a little bit skeptical, because this particular vendor does make claims like that that are a bit inflated. And so in the email, the vendor said that they were concerned about my website having an accessibility issue that could lead to legal problems. And they had put a screenshot of the website's homepage with annotated with a circle around an element they said wasn't accessible. And so I was just a little miffed by this, and because they were sort of using fear mongering to try and sell me their product. And so what did I do? I went to their homepage. I found an accessibility issue with their footer. It was like a sign up form for their newsletter. I took a screenshot of that, annotated it, and said, well, you have an accessibility problem right here. And I sent that back to the vendor. Now, like a good sales engineer, the sender called me and said, hey, can we have a conversation about this? So we did. And I was just like, dude, you know, it's just kind of underhanded to me that you would do this, because, you know, we do care about accessibility at my organization, and we're working towards it. And, you know, if you've been in the space, it's a moving target, and, you know, things change, website standards update, content is always in flux. And so how can you, why do you want to say that? Why do you want to lean on the legal part? And he told me that in their experience, you know, it's great to talk about the moral and ethical and user experience and even business positive ramifications for accessibility. But his company found that to really move the needle with accessibility, they needed to use the legal approach, and that people responded better to a stick than a carrot. So we kind of agreed to disagree on that a little bit, but it did temper my thinking, so that I realized that, okay, you know what? We don't have to inhabit just one spot on this spectrum. All four of these approaches to accessibility advocacy are valid and have their place. And in fact, we can inject empathy into each of these approaches, because at the end of the day, somebody you know, or somebody you love, or eventually you yourself will need an accessible digital experience. We are all in the process of growing older, and with that just comes wisdom and perspective and glitches in these wonderful bodies of ours, which make us really glad to have more accessible tools. So morally and ethically speaking, accessible digital experiences are the right thing to do for you and your loved one. Regarding user experiences, an accessible website is better for you and your loved one because you can use it. And both you and your loved one will probably frequent and support businesses who have digital experiences that are accessible. And legally, you and your loved one probably want to be the ones to have to file and pursue a lawsuit just to be included. That does not sound like a fun thing to me.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizedigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code ACCESSIBILITYCRAFT to save 10% on any plan.
At the end of the day, empathy and accessibility is, I think, is realizing that disability and accessibility are about all of us. And this is actually a really good thing. In our English language, the word disability often has a negative connotation to it. But in fact, the Latin root dis literally means in twain or in two, which is kind of the idea of moving in different directions, which is not a negative idea at all, because from dis we make our words discern. And now I'm thinking of other, discern and dissect and all kinds of things that, like disability, start with that prefix. And so disability can actually just be thought of the and abilities in different directions. And we all experience this every day, regardless of our level of ability, whenever, you know, we put on glasses or use curb cuts or listen to audiobooks or any other inventions that were invented by or for people with disabilities. So my point is that there is a great deal of empathy in all of these approaches. They do need, I still feel like, the more valiant way to do accessibility is because it's the right thing to do. But I recognize that, the law is there for a purpose, and people fought really hard for the ADA and its enforcement, which happily we're seeing now, and the laws in the EU and all around the world. And we're seeing these come into focus more and more. So I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about Eureka experiences, what I'm calling. And Eureka is actually a word with a Greek origin. It means a cry of joy or satisfaction when one finds or discovers something, usually something spectacular or that they've longed for or been seeking heartily. But the word is one story credits the word to Archimedes, who was a Greek mathematician. When he stepped into his bath one day, he exclaimed "Eureka!" because he, being having a mathematical mind, realized that when he got into the bath, it displaced some water, and he came to the conclusion at that point that was because of his body getting in, and that the water his body displaced was equal to the volume of the body that was displacing it. And so that led to all kinds of cool mathematical theorems and such. On the right-hand side of the slide here, we have a 16th century picture of Archimedes in his barrel tub, just enjoying that realization and, basically having a grand old time. Splish splash, he was taking a bath, right? In the US, we often think of California when the word Eureka comes up. It's actually the California state motto, and it originated there with the discovery of gold near Sutter's Mill in 1848. So I'm curious, based on that, have any of you had eureka experiences in your life where you all of a sudden got something after either not understanding it, or it came to light for you, but you had an aha moment. And I'm wondering if you would post that in the chat, if you would. I can start. So I am a piano player, and I really enjoy music. But when I was young, because of my blindness, I had a very difficult time sight reading music from a distance, and I had to lean over the keyboard, which really wasn't pragmatic as the music got more advanced. So I learned to play by ear growing up. And throughout middle school and high school, I learned a bunch of different concepts and mechanisms that sort of worked for composition and improvisational stuff, chord progressions and things, but I really didn't understand why until I got to college and took a music theory class. And that music theory class was one of the most enlightening experiences of my life, because it gave me the ability to articulate a language that I already knew in my head. So, you know, I understood why some chords work together, why some harmonies worked and others didn't. And it just caused me to flourish in terms of my ability to talk about music and to make it even better. So that was our eureka experiences. So I'm seeing Laurie says, I have had many learning music as well. That's great. You're a guitar player. So cool. We should jam sometime. Ricky says that many eureka moments, figuring out accessibility issues, even just understanding the vocabulary. Now, yeah, that is a eureka experience. there is a lot to the vocab, and it is. It's not an easy thing to digest, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit as well. So thanks for those answers. But now let's focus in on how eureka can lead to empathy. Essentially, what I've tried to do the past several years in my my conversations about accessibility with people who may be new to it is design events or experiences that help them realize and appreciate another person's life and circumstances and experiences. I want to give people a taste of what living with a disability might be like. I don't think you can really help them understand fully what that's like. However, it is possible to create more immersive experiences that foster appreciation and empathy. I find that if these are hands-on or interactive, the experiences can be more effective. And I'll tell you a story about one ride-sharing trip I took. I use Uber and Lyft a lot because I don't drive due to my vision. And one day, my Lyft driver came to my home to bring me to my office. And like a lot of drivers, she wanted to chit-chat, and we talked about how she was doing, the weather, and she asked me what I did for a living. So I told her I was a software engineer. Typically, the conversation, you know, will stay sort of surfacey there, but she was interested in knowing more and asked me what kind of software work I did. So I began talking with her about accessibility, and her interest was really piqued. She wanted to know what that was, because she had never really heard or thought about people with disabilities using the web, or in particular, her website. She's a realtor, and, you know, as such, wanted to make sure everyone could use her website, or was concerned about that, you know, because she hadn't thought of it before. So we began talking about the principles of being able to perceive and operate and understand what's going on your website, that it should be robust. And eventually she kept asking enough questions that I pulled out my phone and fired up my my mobile screen reader on her website. And by the time we reached my destination, she asked if we could continue this conversation. So this was probably one of the easiest client conversions I've ever had. I think it was wonderful, because later that week, we met over Zoom and talked more about accessibility. And I was able to show her firsthand, using a tool I'll demonstrate in a little bit, what it might be like for someone who's blind to use her website. And that relationship continues to this day. Experiences like that don't come along every day, but when they do, they sure are appreciated. So at this point, I just want to take some time to discuss some tools that can be used to build empathy for disabilities. There are a lot of these around, and the most simple and central one that we all use, or most of us use, is a keyboard. Most of us, however, use both a keyboard and a mouse, the keyboard for typing and the mouse for most everything else. But as you may know, most modern computer systems are hopefully designed so that most or all of their functionality can be carried out with only the keyboard. And many people don't know this. Last week, I was talking with the head of accessibility at Pegasystems. Her name is Jill Power. And she told me about a game or a challenge she's done called the Put Your Mouse Down Challenge. And I was so inspired by that I actually want to do that with you guys now. So in the name of generating empathy, I'm wondering if you would join me in a game. What I would like you to do right now is put your mouse away or off to the side, and using only your keyboard, open or navigate to your favorite email clients, compose a new email, send it to me, and my email address, I'll type in the chat, is Simon, S-I-M-O-N, at pedalpoint.com. Attach an image or whatever to it, just using the keyboard, and send it. And once I receive your email, I will send you a free gift. So if you're willing to do that, I have a nice timer here, and I want to give us 3 minutes. So you are welcome to use, you know, your phones or whatever to look up ways to do, you know, keyboard shortcuts or whatnot.
Zoom.
Yes, you can leave Zoom, definitely.
Well, as I was saying, we don't know how to leave Zoom with our keyboard, right?
Right. Yeah. That's true. One hint I can tell you is that on Macs, if you hold down the Command key and hit Shift, I'm sorry, Tab, it will cycle through your open applications. And most applications that you are in allow you to hold down Command Shift and press question mark to open a searchable help menu that will also enable you to navigate through the file, edit, and whatnot menus that are usually present at the top of the screen. My email is simon at pedalpoint, pedal.com. All right, I can hear those keys clacking.
Simon, I have a keyboard trap in Google Slides. I can't get out of it.
Oh, no. That's not good. Is that just with my presentation or is that Google Slides in general?
Well, you know, I had my slides up, so it thinks I want to edit my slides. But I can't get past the one slide. It's just cycling through all the different fields on that slide.
All right, about 1 minute left, guys. You're doing great. I know you are. Coming down. I haven't checked my email yet. I'm not going to until later just because I don't want you to lose this wonderful elevator music or get trapped in my own keyboard trap. You made it to Outlook into the new email icon, but I think you guys know. Oh, no. All right. Well, we'll leave this as an exercise for you to finish in the future if you so desire. Amber, do you want to go ahead and do the poll you had in mind?
Yeah, so this is our extra fun. Can you answer this poll question with the keyboard only? We've got a few answers coming in. Can you see these, Simon?
I can't see the answers, no.
Okay, yeah, so I'll end it in just a couple minutes. It looks like we've got 13 of 30 people have figured out how to answer it with their keyboard only.
Nice job, folks.
I'll give people a couple more minutes and then we'll turn it off so that you can read out the results.
Don't know, Judge. Yeah, attaching is a tricky one there. The help menu is kind of crazy. Because in Outlook, anyway, there's all kinds of different attaching options when you want to browse your computer or whatever. So,
I think if we had any screen reader users on this webinar, they have bested us all.
Yeah, most likely.
Oh, someone says the submit button doesn't work in the poll with the keyboard
dear.
Only.
Oh no.
Works for radios. All right. I'll go ahead and end the poll. If anyone wants to answer it with their mouse, feel free. I'm gonna give you about 15 seconds and then I'm gonna end it. Oh, Ricky said submit button on the poll works with the space bar.
Maybe good job. Key. Okay.
All right. There's our results if you want, and I'll go back on mute.
Yeah, that's kind of what I expected. I mean, there's actually more yeses here than I would have thought. But
yeah, do you want to read the numbers just for people in case they can't get these?
Sure. So for yeses, we have 5 out of 16, which is a whopping 31%, and no responses were 11 out of 16. Or 69%. So well done, folks. No shame here. No problem. This was not a test to see how keyboard savvy you are. This was an exercise in empathy. Because if you struggled with that, or even if you didn't, you now have a little bit of an idea of what it might be like to not be able to use a mouse. And a lot of people cannot do that or choose not to do that. So thank you for participating and much appreciated. So other tools that can build empathy are a screen reader. If you want to take this up one notch, you could just use your keyboard, turn off your monitor and turn off your screen and then turn on your screen reader, whichever one you may have. On your computer. That can be a bit intense because I've found a lot of people get a little nervous with the screen reader that starts talking to them and they don't know how to turn it off, especially if you're in a room where other people are sitting around you. I have a little bit of a middle ground for that I'm going to show you in a minute. But there are also various simulators and websites and browser extensions that help with this. No Coffee is a Firefox extension. It used to be on Chrome. I'm not sure where it went, but this will simulate various types of colorblindness. So you can check a box to simulate red-green colorblindness, and the colors on the page you're on will update so that they look similar to what someone with red-green colorblindness might experience. Dyslexia simulators are a fun one. I'm going to show you one thing here. There's a browser extension that does this, but this page, if you're feeling a little queasy because the letters are moving around, that's intentional. there's JavaScript and CSS on this page that sort of simulate what dyslexia might feel like to a person. So you, even if you just look at the header, which should say dyslexia, the E and the S might move around. So dyslexia. So that's one example. And then if you really want to get frustrated or have a laugh, Jen Harris posted on the WP Alley Facebook group a couple weeks ago this website called User In Your Face. And it's like an experiment in anti-patterns and worst practices for UI. It's kind of gamified, but you don't be surprised if you get frustrated with it. I'll leave that as an exercise to that you can try at home after this if you want a laugh or you feel like throwing your monitor across the room. Both may be good options. And then usability groups and labs are also very good empathy building tools, because if you or someone you know can actually see someone using your product, your software, your website, and that person has a disability, you're going to get firsthand insights into what they can and cannot do with your solution. Those are obviously more complicated and expensive to put on, but they can be pretty valuable. So I just want to show you real quickly a Chrome extension that I had a chance to write and released a couple of Global Accessibility Awareness Days ago. It's an extension called Sight Unseen, S-I-T-E, Unseen. And if you're interested in grabbing this yourself, you can go to sightunseen.dev, S-I-T-E-U-N-S-E-E-N.dev. Post that in the chat if you want. And there's just a big button on the page. If you follow it, you'll go to the Chrome web store and you can install it. And it actually, when it's active, you'll see the icon for the extension in your toolbar, which is this little blue stick figure guy with a white cane walking in front of a globe. And I will go to one of the most accessible websites I know, equalizeddigital.com, and we'll see how this works there. So I'm going to tap on my little friend, sight unseen friend here. And what you'll see, if you're watching my browser, the whole screen just went black. Now, nothing has disappeared, but there's an opaque overlay obscuring the contents of the web page. And at the bottom right section of the page, there's a box of text outlined in a white border that contains the parsable text or programmatically recognizable text that the computer or the browser can recognize from the elements under keyboard focus. So right now, we're at the very beginning of the page on the title, and then we're seeing the page title, which is Equalize Digital Website Accessibility Audits, Remediation, and Consulting. So there are a number of controls you can use to navigate this page. Because this is the browser, the tab key works as expected, navigating you through interactive controls. So if I hit tab, you may see now that it says link, skip to main content, which is great because Equalize Digital has a skip link to bypass the navigation. You can also use the arrow keys, left and right, to move back and forth between the elements on the page, much like you might do with a screen reader. Now, if you happen to get lost, there is a peek button, P-E-E-K, at the top right, which if you click it, will reveal the website for the web page for just a few seconds. So you can sort of get your bearings, because on websites that have good visible focus state, you can tell where you are. And there's also a bunch of other commands that you can use in Sight Unseen, by clicking the help button or by pressing question mark. So I just popped up the keyboard commands. And so we can see that the left and right arrows allow you to proceed to the next or previous element. Tab and shift tab work like they do in the browser, moving between interactive elements. Enter, up, down arrows, and space bar work as they do normally in the browser to select items in a navigable menu or HTML, native HTML control. And then there are a bunch of shortcuts that many screen readers have. So capital, lowercase h and capital H will allow you to advance or backtrack to the next or previous heading, respectively. K and K do the same thing with the next and previous links. L and L, L and a capital L with lists. Lowercase and capital F with form fields. Lowercase B and capital B with buttons. I and I with images. And then landmarks as well with R and capital R. Sorry, I'm having to move my Zoom controls around to see these. So if I close the help and hit the H key here, now I'm on a heading level one, which says become accessible and improve your bottom line, which if I look at the screen or peek at the screen, that's what we're on now, their main Equalize Digital's main heading. So if you're interested, I encourage you to check this extension out. You can download it, try it out. It's not it's definitely not a replacement for actual accessibility testing software or techniques. It's more of an empathy building tool. As I mentioned, I used this tool to show my Lyft driver client her website, and it was very eye-opening for her, no pun intended. Aha. So that's sight unseen. And let's see. Okay. Can you all see my slides again? They haven't quite maximized, but I'm okay with that if you are.
Yes, okay, we can see them.
Okay. So I'm going to continue on. Another way to build empathy I found is just expanding people's definition of what disabilities are all about. And this slide, I've called it highlighting different types of disability. And when I say types, I don't really mean disabilities for various senses like sight, hearing, and touch. When many people think of disabilities, the first thing that may come to mind are assistive technologies that are used, like a white cane or a wheelchair. And those definitely are used by people with disabilities, but they're often associated with permanent disabilities, which usually, you know, are fairly long lasting for those who live with them. However, I like to tell people that there are also temporary disabilities. So if you happen to get cataracts or break your arm or have some other illness or injury, your mobility or sight will be impaired for some period of time. And that's important to know, because during that time, you will really benefit from accessible digital experiences. Even more than that, there are situational disabilities. And I love talking about these because everybody experiences some of these every day. Whenever you're looking at your phone in a sunny day and the text is washed out because it's really bright, that's situational disability. If you're in a crowded room speaking and listening to someone, you have to filter out the background noise, that's a situational disability for hearing. If you're holding something in one hand, like a new baby or any kind of thing, or using one hand for something, and only have one hand to operate your mobile device, you're going to be pretty glad if you can use the app on that device with one hand. That is a situational disability for touch. And if you're in another country where you don't speak their language and you're communicating through heavy accents, that could be a speech-related situational disability. So we all encounter these, and we all benefit from accessible technology when we do. So this chart I'm showing on the slide here is originated from Microsoft's inclusive design project. So it's fairly well known these days, but it basically just has stick figures in each of the in a grid laid out for situational, temporary, and permanent disabilities. For the rows and the columns are different senses like see, hear, touch, and speech. So that chart does a good job with some of our physical senses. However, there are also situational disabilities for neurodiversities. And we can think of some permanent neurodiverse conditions like autism or ADHD. But I'm wondering if you can think of any situational neurodiversities that you've probably experienced today. So if you can think of any of those, I invite you to put them in the chat now. You may be experiencing them at this exact moment. A migraine, yes. Tiredness, yes. Distractions to your being, yes, being, all right, every frustration, yes, lack of coffee, good. My brother came up with a really good one when I showed him this, he said multitasking, and that is huge, but yet embarrassment, yeah, you guys are great, misplaced eyeglasses, right, yeah, so every day we are faced with a myriad of situations that will cause our attention and our ability to focus to be challenged. I mean, fatigue, tiredness, exhaustion, stress, anxiety, feeling frustrated, hungry, angry, or thirsty, multitasking. All these things are experienced by everybody at some point or another, and they are... she is very cute. They are... they're common to all of us. Going back to Jen Harries again, she has this site called Easy A1Y Guides, and right now she's putting out a series of videos about how to do quick about various topics of running an accessibility agency or doing accessible audits and stuff. And there's one about how to sell accessibility to new builds and website remodeling, remodel clients, or people who are redesigning this site. And she said that she asks a question of her clients. It's a very simple one, but it's do you want people to be able with this? Do you want people to be able to use your website on their phones? And of course, everybody's going to answer yes to that because most of the most e-commerce transactions anyway, and probably most traffic is conducted over a mobile device these days. But answering yes actually means you're agreeing to good color contrast and legible font sizes, because when you use your phone outside in the bright sunshine, your text gets washed out. And so that's a really good way when you're talking with a client to broach the subject of accessibility and how it applies to all of us. So thank you for your participation in that activity. All right, so I wanted to, I'll speed up here because we're running a little short on time. Talk about how to inject accessibility into stuff that's already happening at your organization. When we're advocating for something, it's easy, I found it's very easy for me to want to get on my soapbox, take up my bullhorn and say, this needs to happen now. And sometimes that's very appropriate. But often, as the saying goes, the idiom goes, we catch more flies than honey than vinegar. And not that our clients are flies, but it may be more effective to try and fit into with what is already going on rather than trying to change everything all at once. And that's all about understanding the culture of the organization or the client you are working with. And when you're able to align with the culture and go with its grain instead of against it, it really speeds things up. There was a panel about this very topic at AXCON 2024, and one of the panelists had this great quote, which is, "Culture eats strategy for breakfast." And it's very, very true. Regardless of what you're trying to do, if your culture isn't, if it's going against the culture, it's going to be very difficult to achieve. And some ways to look for an organization's culture are to look at the mission statement. If you see words like customer, clients, delivers, everyone, things like that, those are keys that can be used to open conversations about accessibility. You need to consider what the organization values, be it profit or impact. Do they thrive on data or being the best? Understanding those values and what makes that organization tick can show you how to position accessibility in a light that will show it to further to pour into their values as opposed to taking away from them. All organizations have in place processes for onboarding, training, marketing, et cetera. And accessibility can be injected into these. For example, at my my company, we have an established process for sending out email campaigns to customers. And the process involves the design getting vetted and being converted from a set of images to HTML that contain those images. And for a long time, that HTML was a set of tables that were used for layout. We still do need to use tables for layout and emails. In case you didn't know, it's kind of archaic, but different email clients have limitations that make CSS not entirely reliable. But anyway, if you've ever tried to navigate a table that's used for layout with a screen reader, it's annoying because it's going to tell you how many rows and columns are in that table. A screen reader expects a table to be to contain data. But we can add a role to that table that says it's presentational. And by doing that in this process of prepping email campaigns, we were able to make that piece of the email that every customer received more accessible. Looking at an organization's priorities, goals, and projects are a great way to find themes or spaces to talk about and inject accessibility. Particularly if you hear about new initiatives or redesigns or upgrades, those are really good places to look for opportunities. There are a lot of stories I can tell about this. I'm going to skip those for time, but the basic premise here is to ask questions to understand the barriers that might be there and invite commitment and ownership, because everybody likes to have their own ideas. And so when you act on those. So when you're asking questions as opposed to making recommendations, and those questions lead people to think about accessibility, their stake in the answer they come up with is deeper than if they just were responding like, okay, I'll do what you tell me or you suggest. But if they come up with a plan, they've got some skin in the game, and that is a great thing. Here's a mind hack that has actually changed my life. Whenever you use the word but, B-U-T, I encourage you to try replacing it with the word and-y. Just a little bit of a conjunction switch there. But the word but can actually feel dismissive and invalidating of the previous statement. For instance, if I'm advocating accessibility, and I say something like, I know we need to increase revenue, but accessibility is the law. You're kind of putting the person you're talking to in a tough situation, because they their priority may be the increasing revenue part, and you're kind of deprioritizing what's most important to them with that little word but. However, if you change to using and, that can validate both ideas that are on either side of the conjunction, and that it actually allows more than one truth to exist, more than one thing to be true at the same time. So I could say our budget is limited and we need to make accessibility a priority. So that's interesting because it didn't invalidate either one of those statements, but rather encouraged the people in the conversation to cultivate the ability to hold opposing perspectives in tension. And, you know, that's something that we need to practice because it goes against the black and white nature that we learn as kids. And most of life is really more of a spectrum than an on-off switch, right? And when we can hold ideas like that in tension, we can consider how to solve for both and not just have a yes-no answer, but sort of find a third path. When you know your audience and you're able to use and, you endorse their needs and their concerns without invalidating or throwing out your own. And it just makes way possible conversations on for all the ideas. Thank you for that typo call out. I will look at that. Now, one thing I found that's really useful is if you're able to build a network of accessibility champions. These are people who are already empathetic towards accessibility or are learning to be. And as a developer, I've looked around in my organization, you know, to my colleagues in my own software engineering and web developer department, but I've also looked at DevOps and IT designers and user interface, customer service, digital marketing, content creation, legal, and even human resources and DEI. And all these departments can have key contributions to make to accessibility. There was one woman that I met in our customer service department, and she, anytime someone had an issue related to not being able to see or understand how our website works, she would get that call. And the reason was is that she was a screen reader ninja. And a lot of the folks who were having trouble navigating our site were using screen readers. So I reached out to her, and it turned out that she knew this stuff backward and forward because her brother was blind. And so we began chatting, and I encouraged my teammates, and did this myself, to send anytime we were pushing out a web accessibility feature or fix to our production website, we would ask her to test it first with a screener because she knew how to do it hands down. Multiple different ones, JAWS, NVIDIA, Narrator. I think she had a TalkBack on Android as well. So it was great to have that. If you can find leaders and decision makers to be these accessibility champion allies, that's even better because, you know, they're the ones who will have authority to make choices. But regardless, it's great if you can meet regularly to discuss how to advocate, educate, and integrate accessibility into projects and whatnot. Because it's easy to feel alone when you're doing accessibility. It's a lot of work, and sometimes it can seem like it's thankless. So with that, I just want to wrap up with a few strategies for keeping empathy at the forefront when you are discussing and advocating for accessibility. If you attended AxCon 2024, there was a guy named Jonah Berger who gave a keynote. If you didn't, you can still watch the video. His video, it's great. This guy wrote a book called The Catalyst, How to Change Anyone's Mind, where he talked about reasons people are reluctant to change and methods that we can use to help them see different perspectives. And one of them was to provide a menu. And what that meant is instead of a single option, like we need to make our website accessible, which may cause the stakeholder being spoken to feel pushed or pressured to make a yes, no decision. And that can lead to a negative response. Instead of that, why not think about giving multiple options and letting them choose? So say, for instance, do we want to review our designs for accessibility? Do we want to test for accessibility issues in QA? Or do we want to have our customers and end users alert us to accessibility problems? All of those are answers that may happen in real life. And when you give the stakeholders the ability to choose one, there's a sense of agency that is granted there, as opposed to just feeling pressured. And again, just like the listening, it invites ownership and participation. And, you know, they may choose the option that you're not really most enthused about, but at least they'll understand that option and have some ownership in it. And they'll think about it as opposed to just responding yay or nay. The week before last, there was a presentation given on IAP by Michelle Jacques. She talked about scaling accessibility, starting with hearts and minds. And she had this one piece of advice that's just golden. Do one thing, because progress beats perfection every time. Small incremental steps can make a huge difference over the long term. If you turn 1 degree or make a 1 degree change, in 500 miles, you're going to be in a vastly different place than where you are now. So when you are advocating for accessibility, there's a lot to talk about. There are so many things like standards and success criteria in the WCAG that it can be overwhelming. So when you are working with folks who are newer to accessibility, whether it's in a training or a feedback session, maybe brainstorming, it may be good to end that time together with just an exhortation to just, all right, there's a lot of information here. Let's just do one thing. A couple weeks ago, I had a training set up with an external vendor at my company. It was a live consultation to people who were, some were very familiar with accessibility and some were just hearing about it for the first time. So he had a broad audience to cover. And boy, did he cover it, because he talked about WCAG and screen readers and assistive technology and laws. And it was just a lot for those who haven't earned their CPAC certification or something like that. And so when we ended, I just said, okay, there's a lot of information here. We may feel overwhelmed, but if we can find just one thing that aligns with our work and the things we do every day, that's enough. Because if everybody just does one thing, we're going to make progress, and it will fuel the momentum for efforts in accessibility, and people will start to understand and appreciate it more. Finally, I just want to encourage you that progress in accessibility, in my experience, takes time. And so it requires persistence and patience, and it's okay to feel frustrated. It's normal. I get frustrated sometimes. One organization I was working with, they unfortunately got into accessibility because they received a demand letter. And I don't know if it was legitimate or from a bounty hunter, but it basically said, I can't use your website. I'm taking you to court unless you settle with me for X amount of dollars. So the company ended up doing just that. And afterwards, they came to me for advice on how to prevent this from happening again. We talked about implementing, alt tags and good color contrast and stuff. And I suggested an accessibility statement was a really good way to show your commitment to this journey. But they got very, very nervous about the accessibility statement. They felt like if they put any sort of verbiage on their site saying that other people might see it and say, oh, we can get them, in another lawsuit. And it took me a long time to articulate in a way that was effective to them that an accessibility statement is not so much a guarantee that your website is accessible, but that it's a commitment toward that. And so after 3 years of going back and forth and back and forth and getting external experts to say sort of the same thing and to draft accessibility statements, we went through a few of those and they were picked apart. I even got a comment that said, well, one time that was like, well, do we really want to be the first company in our space to do this? You know, take this step out there. And I'm like, yes, of course you want to be the first company in your space to do this. You're taking a stand for a good thing. And it's, you know, it's actually going to reduce your legal risk because you'll give people a way to contact you rather than sue you. But eventually we were able to come to an agreement. And we, after that 3-year process, earlier this year, we published an accessibility statement. And I got to say, of all the things I've done with that company this year, that is the most fulfilling thing, this little tiny accessibility statement, because I've worked so hard for it. But when you're making inroads and advocacy efforts, we need to remember that relationships and trust grow on the scale of weeks, months, and even years. And it's the people who are making the decisions. So if you encounter someone who is instantly responsive to accessibility, like my friendly neighborhood Lyft driver, chances are some other people or circumstances have already been nurturing that effort for some time. And what I find is to remember how long it took me to become an advocate for accessibility. It wasn't overnight. You know, I'm legally blind, and for, I don't know, 10 years of my web development journey, I really didn't give it any thought because I could see well enough and, you know, I could get around with the mouse. And it showed me that the Eureka experiences that we talked about earlier can be a long time in the making. And so we're all people, we're all human. And as long as we're moving in the right direction, I think we'll get there more often than not. So that's what I have to share with you. Thank you so much for your attention. And I think we have a little bit of time for questions. I went a little longer than I anticipated, but much appreciated.
That was great. Thank you so much, Simon. I especially love when we get to have some interactive presentations. So it's wonderful. Let's see, Amy had a question and I kind of have a follow-up question too, but I'll start with Amy's question. Amy says she does a lot of disability empathy activities and workshops for college instructors, including a keyboard-only challenge. Amy often struggles with how to use these experiences without implying that because now they've done these activities, the able-bodied participants fully, quote, get what it's like to be disabled. Do you have any suggestions or validations?
I want to validate what you're doing, definitely. You know, if you know somebody who has a lived disability and they're willing to be part of those conversations, I think that could just, you know, be really effective in terms of saying, okay, this is an approximation what you're doing. It's not, however, you know, the same experience. So if you can involve people with disabilities, that's all the more. If you have people who come to you and say that, you know, up the challenge, tell them to turn off their screen and use a screen reader, whatever. That's an option too. But regardless, I don't know. It seems kind of naive to think if you can use a keyboard, then you totally understand what it's like to live with a disability. Amber, did you have a thought about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was actually going to ask sort of a question along this line, because we've had some conversations. We sponsor some WordCamps, and a lot of times people who attend WordCamps, if they don't already work for a really big company, they may have never heard of accessibility. And so we've talked about ideas like the Inclusiveville, that your thing is built based upon your browser extension, which I love that. Browser extension, we've thought about what if we set up a couple of computers and just had that up, right? So people could go through the Inclusiveville challenge because it has specific tasks you're supposed to complete without seeing the screen. And that, but then we've talked about, you know, the challenges there of there's also sometimes pushback from people with disabilities that it's ableist to create these kinds of like empathy lab experiences. And so, I think, you know, so we've never actually ended up doing that.
Yeah.
But I've wondered, and I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. I find wording is key. So if you need to be careful with words like understand or, you know, fully experience or whatever, because you won't. But so I try to use terms like approximate or appreciate. That can help, because sometimes when a disability is part of our identity, and I've experienced this myself, we get attached to that and almost proud of it in a way, because it gives us a source of strength to just say, you know, whether it's to vent frustration or just, you know, be our own person, that's great. And at the same time, we as people with disabilities have as much of a responsibility as those who don't, may not have disabilities, to work to connect so that we can share our experiences in a way that will be helpful for others to implement accessible, you know, accessibility and stuff. So it's sort of a give and take, but I definitely hear what you're saying. I've actually gotten comments about that with Sight Unseen, and I did change some of my language about it as a result. So that's what I've seen, but I would encourage you to keep exploring that, because despite the, you know, there are naysayers, but I mean, as someone with a disability, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt if you're trying. You know, I mean, you're aware and you're active, and, you know, it's awkward. People are going to make mistakes. You know, they're not going to know if I like person first language or identity first language. Just ask me, you know. It's okay. You know, part of that is empathy building, right? You're building trust in a relationship enough that we can have those clumsy discussions for a while, and we're okay with that.
I really appreciate that. And like thinking about, you know, the words and how we can use that. I think Amy said the same thing. Amy is actually disabled, which is part of why they struggle here, but they like the word approximate, and we'll try and use that instead of understand. So I think you're right. Like, there's different language where we can say, you know, we're giving you an experience of, like, you're not really like understanding what it's like to live with a certain disability.
Right, you know, right. And, you know, the language is tricky. I mean, like, there are words like simulate and emulate. Maybe, maybe not. It depends on who you're talking to. But, you know, approximate, appreciate is a good one, you know, because you're not claiming any sort of understanding or firsthand knowledge there. You're just saying, oh, you know, that's something that I should be aware of.
Yeah. Kevin also had a good point. Kevin is a disabled practitioner and said, if you involve people with disabilities, do compensate them for their time if they give feedback or input about the product or website.
Definitely. So, most definitely.
Yeah. We feel pretty strongly about that as well. You know, I think there's a few people in the WordPress community who have disabilities, and they often get asked to test things for free all the time. So
unfortunately, that's the way it can be. And I think there's probably a balance to that, because you want to advance the cause and you don't want to be taken advantage of. So that line can be tricky to find sometimes.
Yeah. Let's see. Vanessa had a question. What do you say to companies who don't have the budget to do this, or who don't really think it's important to do something for the minority?
Yeah, well, so I ran into that. I've run into that several times. I think so answers like that are typically going to come from decision makers and stakeholders. So you can use some of the techniques that I described to sort of spread awareness around. One thing I did were lunch and learn training sessions, which just sort of material to develop awareness They were totally optional, but it was during COVID. And so, you know, a lot of people came to learn what accessibility meant and, you know, how it applied to their daily lives. So I was able to sort of get some inroads there. You know, find your champions. There are people who, even if they don't know it yet, they will get on this train, you know, because of whatever experiences they've had in their lives, whatever relationships they have, and they have a natural empathy toward it or a natural predisposition. And so if you can think about people in the various departments or teams I talked about, that's a good way. Just start having conversations and listen during those conversations. You know, so those are a few things I'd suggest. It's hard, and it takes a lot of time. I mean, one company I worked with, the president just, you know, wanted to write a check and be done with accessibility. And that's not how it works, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, and you might be able to compare it to other things that are ongoing, like, you know, search engine optimization is something that you constantly
Most
have to be working
understand.
On. Yeah, exactly. Or security or website performance or mobile friendliness. It's just one of those things that is an ongoing discipline, right?
Yeah, I think for us, a lot of times we're like really spending a lot of time trying to figure out what are the key performance indicator that whatever stakeholder like matters most to that stakeholder, and different people at different levels of an organization are going to have different metrics that they care the most about, right? So I think understanding what is their bottom line KPI that they have to achieve with their website. And then from there, you can connect, you can almost always connect accessibility back to it. But I think the argument on the budget front or whatever is going to be very different depending upon who the person is and what their objective is with their website.
Yeah. One interesting approach I heard to that was, all right, you can share the difference in cost of finding and addressing accessibility issues either early in the process or after it's been launched. And, you know, there have been figures like it's 10 times more expensive, you know, afterwards to, you know, if you wait until after things are launched, you know, and so, it's definitely a journey.
Okay. It looks like we have one more question, Lynn, or a comment. Lynn said it's important to have this conversation continue in everyone's quote, real life. You and I have given everyone a great starting point. So yeah, I think maybe that's our little call to action for the end of this webinar, right? Is think about who you might need to talk to, either whether it's your clients or if you work in-house at a university or a company, someone, you know, that's higher up that might be a decision maker. How can you take this back to them?
Right.
And then come report in the Facebook group and tell us how it went.
That's right.
Simon's
exactly.
There.
Yeah. I'll love to hear that.
Yeah. So, Simon, I really appreciate this. It has been a wonderful talk and great challenge. I was one of the people who failed to be able to send you an email with my keyboard only.
Goodness. That's okay.
Thank you for that. And can you give us just a quick reminder where people can find you, if there's a social media platform you're most active on, what the website is for Pedal Point, those sorts
of things? Sure. So again, my name is Simon Miner. You can find me at pedalpoint.com, pedalpoint.com. My email is simon@pedalpoint.com, and you can find me and Pedal Point on LinkedIn mostly, and we will be glad to help you learn, practice, and experience digital accessibility.
Well, thanks so much. Thank you, everyone. We'll be back at the beginning of the month with our next WordPress accessibility meetup with Nat Croft. Until then, feel free to connect with us online if you have any questions. I'm going to just wait a few minutes before I end the webinar to make sure that our transcript catch up, and we'll be back soon.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.